This episode of Data Mesh Radio is brought to you in conjunction with Next Data, the startup Jamak Deghani, the creator of Data Mesh, formed to focus on many of the challenges we discuss here in Jamak's Corner. As she states in her post announcing the company, if you are a rebel who shares our cause, a data leader who wants to adopt and help design our technology, or an investor interested in shaping the future of analytics and AI, we invite you to get involved at nextdata.com or by emailing hello@nextdata.com. I do encourage you to reach out to my good friend and awesome co-host in these episodes, Jamak. This specific episode is part of a longer interview I conducted with Jamak. The goal of these conversations is to dig deeper into specific topics rather than skimming the surface and to really discuss Jamak's views on the now and the future of data mesh. What is possible now? What can we do to set ourselves up for success? And what is her ideal picture in the future once we have the ways of working and the tooling more figured out? Hopefully you get some great insights as well as seeing another side of the funny and wonderful person behind the data mesh paradigm and Next Data. Please do also follow Jamak on LinkedIn and Twitter for more interesting insights and to keep an eye out on what she is working on. I think you'll be very interested. Jamak's Corner number 19, an AI ML future without so much needless complexity. This episode is part of the greater AI and ML conversation I had with Jamak. To start, Jamak recognizes we aren't where we want to be in terms of capabilities, you know, ways of working or tooling to make kind of her vision a reality just yet. But if we can make it so data scientists can trust and easily consume from data products, that we can create data products that don't care what use case type there is, right? Regular analytics or AI or ML, can we remove a lot of the complexity they face? Do they need feature stores for data they aren't transforming? If they can get continued access and know the quality, why create a separate process that has fragility instead of trust the data product owners upstream? I wasn't smart enough in the moment to ask about, do we need to have a copy of the training data itself for reproducibility? But folks smarter than me on ML can answer that one, probably in the affirmative. But overall, there is a lot of complexity in the way we do AI and ML because data scientists can't trust the sources of their data, and they feel the need to take control because if they don't, their models will surely break. So we need to earn their trust and show them a better way. But again, we aren't there yet. So let's work to make this a reality in the future. I think you'll learn a lot from this one.
As organizations become, I guess, more sophisticated with machine learning, modeling, and data science built in into the functions, now we have this other divide, which is the divide between data engineers and people that produce the raw data or model data, and then people that consume them for a machine learning model. And what happens right now is we try to have rigor, whether it's data mesh or not data mesh, around data discoverability and data governance and security. But the moment that data crosses the wall into the data science world, just put it in the feature store and it's wild, wild west. And it's hard to protect, it's hard to govern. And very, very quickly, we're just going to get ourselves into the same problem that we're today with upstream data. So either we have to say, like, no, these two worlds are so, so different that we shall invent yet another system for getting some order and also remove pain points that occur over time. Or we say, is it just the same thing? Like, why a feature set that is used for training one or multiple. It has to be more than one for it to be worthy of data product. So I agree that not every single data set is a data product. But when there is a feature set that is being used by for training multiple machine learning ML models, how is that any different from data product? Doesn't it need to be discoverable? Doesn't it need to be understandable? Doesn't it need to be like that dev units? Like, what is it so different? And I'm struggling to say, how is that any different? And so far, maybe we haven't had that problem pronounced because we don't have that many data scientists. We have the data scientist team is still maybe relative to other data users, maybe we're smaller. The data sharing and just the chaos of piling data into feature stores and the pipelines that do that, you know, haven't become as hairy and unruly that we haven't paid attention to it, but we're going to get there very quickly. So then why being a data product? Why shouldn't it be? If it has multiple users, it's being shared, why should it be something else than a data product?
Yeah, I think a question that I have is it just repeating work, right? Is it just aggregating, or if there's transformation, if there's additional value, then I see that it should be in there. But if it's not, then you just kind of almost create a signpost to go and exactly. You should consume from this. But I like a lot of what you're saying there of like, and you talked about this earlier of the data can't protect itself in an earlier episode about if it goes into this and then you lose all trust once it's gotten into the data science, realm, then what is the point of doing all this stuff for data if you can't trust it? Like, it just doesn't make sense. And so, yeah, I think that makes a whole lot of sense.
So I think in many cases, the feature sets or feature store or a separate data product for features become redundant. The reason it become redundant is once we have the systems, right? I don't pretend that we have the technology right now. But once you have this multimodal access to the data, to the data products, one of those types of access are tuned for training machine learning models, right? They are feature-oriented. They are columnar-oriented. And because data products have a set of SLOs and guarantees in terms of understandability, discoverability, trust, and so on, quality, and so on, very likely the downstream, you know, data science workload need to do very little to create yet another feature. So they directly use those upstream data products. They directly feed them into their machine training pipelines. Of course, the libraries may need to be extended, and we are actually at Nextdata work on that to have these multiple sources that are data products, and that data comes to them. So in fact, and go into the training functions. So in fact, majority of the cases, we don't have to create this feature store mode of a data product because just directly we use upstream. But in some cases that, let's say the data came as some random text and you want to do some sentiment analysis before you can yet do another training on top of it. So you're actually adding some value or some derived insight or derived information. And in that case, yes. And if that's part of your feature store, then that transformation needs to belong to a data product, you know, in a way.
So I mean, this is fascinating. And I think one question I would have around that is, do you think that we start to have, ABN AMRO talked about this a little bit, but about recipes, right? Where you just go, instead of I am cooking the dish for you, it's, hey, here's the recipe that I used to train this. And you're just going to be sharing the rest. It's kind of, you know, libraries or things like that. It's not like I'm sharing the code. I'm sharing the thing that makes it. So here, I'm going to show you exactly what I did. And if you want to make it, if you want to change it, great. But like that, we almost have the feature store evolve into that. When it makes sense, then you're going to store some of the data. But if you're not doing anything to it exactly, we just need the signposts as to this is what other people have done. And you can start to do recommendation engines around, hey, here's what other people are consuming from when they're working on this and things like, do you think that's going to be kind of where a lot of the feature store work ends up being?
I think so. I think if we think rationally and linearly, that would be the rational next step, right? Once you have these boundaries of data products and APIs of those APIs over time can become more and more tuned into the recipes of, machine learning model workloads and analytical workloads. So instead of sharing raw data, you share the interface that allows you to pass your recipe and get the value that you want, the output of that function, right? You run the recipe on the data product and return the output. Or even, the data product downstream becomes just ask me the questions that you become more and more intelligent. Like just ask me the question that you have and I have the recipe to answer that. So I think that's a rational next step that I see happens, but who knows, maybe we disrupt our thinking in some creative way that I can't imagine right now. And the world look completely different. But if I think about it linearly, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think wrapping up on this kind of general topic of AI and ML in that space, one question I would have is when somebody is starting out and they're thinking on their data mesh journey, you're probably not going to go and say, hey, ML team, you're going to be the first one to produce the data product. We want to serve you and produce. So like how do you see that evolution happening? Or when do you think that is it that as you get bigger and bigger, you're going to start to bring them more and more into that concept of data as a product and you're going to get them ready for it? Or how would you see that like work at the start and then it kind of goes forward?
Yeah, I've actually gone through this experience before. We started as building the data platform to serve the analysts and data scientists, and then bringing the data scientists into the fold of being part of the mesh, essentially. So it's a very tall order to say data scientists change the way you work and become a data producer and provide the guarantees that you want right now on top of everything else that you're doing. I think the initial gap or the bridge that we have to build is get data scientists level up their expectations from data, frankly, and lower the busy work that they're doing, lower the expectation for the busy work that they have to do to directly consume data products. So there is an assumption. Remember, we talked about that mistrust in previous episodes. Right now, by default, data scientists or any other data consumer, they have this posture that I don't trust the data. Even if I get access to it, I don't know if I lose that access tomorrow. Just give me the damn data and I will copy it and I'll put it in my own, feature store. And then I'm free. You know, I have a sense of control and freedom. And I know that I have to do a ton of work to cleanse that data and make sense of it and make it look nice in a way that I can use it. So we've got to change that initially. We've got to create that bridge for people to trust. So give data scientists high quality data product. Give them the interfaces that they want. Don't tell them you've got to go to write a bunch of SQL queries to use this data. No. Give them the Parquet interface that they love. Connect the data products to the pandas or sparks, whatever libraries they use. Get them to trust the system as a whole, so they don't have to do the extra busy work. And once that's done, and once they've seen the value of using data as a product, then they take the bar further up and say, well, we just produced this model that sits in the flow of the data and it produces this other data drive data sets, like all this scoring that you did. Why shouldn't that be a data product? So now let's give you the tool. You don't have to do a lot of extra work, but deploy your ML model in the context of a data product and add the additional rigor and discipline of sharing the metadata to make your data understandable and so on, and plug into the rest of the ecosystem. I think that's probably the path that I see, or I at least have seen work.
Thanks again to Jamak for her time here today. Please follow her on LinkedIn and keep an eye out for interesting developments with what she's doing next. Thanks.